The complaint against me was that I obeyed an illegal order, that I knew it was illegal and I obeyed it anyway. So the complaints got dismissed, but my point is, here is a commissioner who wanted to make a point at the budget hearing to embarrass me and to embarrass the Ethics Commission. And fortunately, it didn't succeed because her colleagues said, this is nonsense. But things like that have happened, but it doesn't happen very often.
When you have the advisory opinions given, do you give any kind of a caveat to the effect that this is just our opinion, this isn't what the law is, so that when they buy their question about it, they don't say, well, the Ethics Committee said this was all right to do this like this.
So it actually does have the force of law. So they can rely on that as long as they have given us all the facts. And we have been, or they have been embarrassed sometimes where people will present us with a request for opinion where they leave out relevant facts. So there was a case of an individual who got an opinion from the Ethics Commission, got arrested a month later, and is waving around his ethics. Well, the Ethics Commission cleared me.
So then they take a writ certiorari to the county court?
It's the appellate. No, it's actually circuit court. It's the appellate division of the circuit court, right? But we don't investigate the request for opinions. We recognized early on that we don't have the resources for that. It's a voluntary process. No one's required to ask for an opinion. So we presume that if you ask for an opinion, you're going to give us all the facts. And if we find out that you haven't, then the opinion is really nullified. It's not worth anything.
What do you expect from the Commission on Ethics as far as the relationship between the ED and the Commission?
I think most importantly that when they're convened, that they're prepared, that they understand the issues that are in front of them. We send out the packets in advance of the meeting, whether they're the requests for opinions, whether they're the complaints, and they understand what's before them so that they come to the meeting prepared. Other than that, that they're try to be as colorblind and as objective as possible, in reviewing matters that come before them. And if they do have, one of our ethics commissioners is a former mayor former retired judge. And if you have a conflict, that you certainly would disclose that conflict, because otherwise that could be embarrassing to the Ethics Commission. It's one of those things where, recognizing that staff is able and capable, also recognizing that in 3 hours a month, you probably don't have a complete sense of what the operation entails. And, so allowing the executive director to run, the administrative side of the shop accordingly, so not getting involved in kind of the minutiae of administration. But my goal is to keep them informed and abreast of things that happen, not everything, obviously, but things that could potentially blow up. And after a number of years, you get a sense of what might and what might not, although you do get surprised, because my rationale is a little different from some other people's. I mean, I'm not a political person, so I don't really understand the way political people operate. But after years, I think I've kind of figured it out. But to let the Ethics Commission know that there may be things coming down the pike, usually the chairman letting him know, because obviously I can't talk to the commissioners outside of a meeting without violating the Sunshine Law. So I wouldn't do that. It just takes practice, and it's a lot of it's the personality of the people sit on the Ethics Commission, too.
Okay, anybody want a second shot?
Yeah, I have one question. With respect to your ability to initiate your own inquiries, and you said that was a little delicate.
Right.
How do you ensure any sort of due process with respect to that? And, clearly it seems to me that someone's going to allege that that it's a politically motivated investigation or something of that.
Oh, that happens all. That does happen. Well, first of all, that you hire the right prosecutor, the right advocate, a person who can objectively evaluate, tips, information that's coming, before him or her, and then understand that the investigation itself, could tarnish somebody's reputation, but ultimately, only the Ethics Commission can determine whether or not there's anything to this violation. So, So if you had an advocate who was regularly filing complaints and the Ethics Commission was finding no probable cause, I think that would be a tip-off that that advocate...
Yeah, but what about if you just you didn't get a tip mm-hmm. or a complaint that you initiated based on your own observation? Have you done that? Do you do that?
Well, I mean, our advocate can read something in the newspaper and say, you know, based on what I've read here, I think we ought to open up an investigation. It happens all the time. I think that one is you have limited resources, two, recognizing that you can't take every case, that we also believe that if there's an investigation that's undertaken, it has to be undertaken thoroughly but relatively quickly. We can't operate like the feds. You can't have investigations that go on for years and years. It's just not—it's not fair to the person under the microscope. By that nature, we have—we have to determine probable cause within 60 days when a complaint gets filed, and I think there's only a year from the day the complaint gets filed to the ultimate determination is made. You know what? It's a tough call. It's something that you have to be sensitive to, but I think you can tell early on if a prosecutor or an advocate has an agenda, and if they do, I mean, I would not want to work with a person like that.
Okay. Anything else?
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Myers, thank you so much for sharing these experiences.
Thank you for having me, and anytime you need me, you know, consider me a resource. And if I can add that, and Chris said that too, we really are a resource for the people who are employed by the government and the officials who serve, and we want everyone, and your Ethics Commission obviously will be the same way, that we really want to keep people out of trouble. You know, the gotcha stuff really isn't that big of a deal to us. So we hope that, you know, we do that, and raising people's awareness of ethics issues, that's really the most important thing we can do. How do you measure that? And one last thing, if I can, I get asked the question a lot, are you making a difference in the community? And I need to send you a report that we did about 5 years ago trying to answer that question. And we involved everyone in the community who's involved in this stuff, the IG, the state attorney, nonprofits, to try to address that question, are we making a difference? And I'll send it to you, and it may be of value to you in the future.
Very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Maybe you'll be a resource to our new executive director.
I'd be happy to talk to that person.
You may live to regret those words.
How many candidates do you have?
Six.
And
six that we're interviewing.
Your interviews are April 24th.
And you have a newsletter or reports or type? What types of things do you publish?
Yeah, we have an annual report, and we do this thing called Ethics Beat, which we put out twice a year as a newsletter, and I can. If I can send a packet to, to whom? Who should I send it to? Staff?
I'm going to volunteer.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I say we're still somewhat non-existent.
Right. I can relate. You know what? I started, and I went out to lunch my first day, and I came back from lunch, and there was this woman, you know, sitting on my couch with her shoes off. And I said, excuse me, you know, you're in my office. She said, oh, this isn't the break room anymore. So we didn't really rate either.
Okay. All right, commission members,
Thank you so much.
I pass out a couple of things. In the interest of trying to have some kind of a procedural format, I just took the liberty to draw up these things. We have about 45 minutes per candidate, and I thought if we could limit the amount of time that we spent with each one, that would be helpful, and it basically allows us to go in a seating order and give each person so many minutes to ask questions and then save some of that time later on and come back and ask some more questions or something like that. It's not etched in granite, but hopefully it'll just hope to keep us on schedule so that nobody spends too much time with one candidate, although if it's necessary, we can do that. So I wanted you to take these home and take a look at them, and if you have some suggestions for improving them, send them to Mrs. Yin, and she will let everybody else know. And whenever we come to the meeting on the 24th, we'll have some guidelines.
That's very helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do.
Good. Okay, is there anything else? And our next meeting will be on the 24th. And
Sorry?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Yeah.
And we'll be getting the questions in advance of that. Is that right? Are you sending out a list of, we all submitted some questions. Are we going to get something in advance of the 24th?
I did not receive questions from everybody.
I see.
On the commission. So it's more along the lines in this draft procedure that each person would come with some prepared questions, their own preferred questions that they would like to ask of the candidates.
And I think you said last time that we have to more or less ask the same questions to everybody.
How are we going to do that?
If you're bringing in your own personal list of questions that you'd like to have asked of the candidates, you certainly could consistently ask those of each person before you.
It's going to be pretty much like it is today. You're not going to have...
I do want to be clear. Are we required to? Is there some requirement that we must, or are we allowed to freelance a little bit but generally stay in the same area?
It would be the latter.
Okay. Yeah. Don't want to violate any personnel rules.
And this really doesn't follow standard county procedure because it is completely solely your decision. So you're not bound by any specific county interviewing policies or procedures.
Okay. I understand that we're not bound by any county procedures, right? Is that the way it works?
We are.
Everybody's independent.
That's true.
Did we have a motion or a
move to adjourn?
Second.
Meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much.
Okay.
See you next week.
Yeah, that's all very, very helpful.
We'll have some
very, very helpful.
Next Wednesday on my notes.
My oldest daughter is starting FAU in the fall.
Speak
to her, Lenny.
What's her interest area?
She wants to go into journalism eventually, although I think that she needs to go more into...